I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Washington, D.C. will host hundreds of thousands of celebrants and protesters over the next 2 days for inaugural festivities, including many from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. WHYY's Dave Davies spoke to Republicans making the trip to rejoice in Donald Trump's move to the White House.
The Trump inauguration follows a remarkable campaign season and an unusually turbulent transition, with controversies about some of Trump's appointments and his dust-ups with the media, the intelligence community, and plenty of Democrats. Gloria Lee Snover was an early Trump supporter from the Lehigh Valley. What is she listening for in his inauguration speech?
What I really want to hear is that the president and the Republican Congress are willing to take the ball all the way down the field. I want to hear that he's going to be firm in what he campaigned on and take it to completion.
For Snover, that means replacing Obamacare, reforming the tax system, redoing trade deals, and creating jobs. Calvin Tucker of Philadelphia is chair of the Pennsylvania Black Republicans Council. Tucker says he'd like to see programs targeted at inner cities, citing an initiative from the Clinton presidency.
Something similar to the enterprise zone that was started in the 90s, where you went into major urban communities, you made substantial investments in those communities.
Tucker says he hopes Trump will remember promises he made to the black community and make them a priority. Republicans attending the inauguration say they wish disappointed Democrats would respect the outcome of the election and give Trump a chance. But Mary Lou Doyle of Chester County says she isn't worried about protests.
I'm a very firm believer in free speech and the right to peaceful assembly. It doesn't bother me at all. I think that there's going to be fantastic security there, and I believe that we all can feel safe in going.
Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Also tomorrow, Vice President Joe Biden will hop on a northbound train home to Delaware. It brings to a close nearly 40 years in public office. WHYY's Shirley Min recently sat down with Joe Biden, looking back on his career.
Before Wilmington's Amtrak station was named the Joseph R. Biden Jr. train station, there was a corner where people arrested by the National Guard were detained in times of unrest. It was 1968. Racial tensions were already high, and after Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, rioters burned down parts of Wilmington. The National Guard was called in and occupied the city for the remainder of the year.
We're the only city in American history ever to be occupied by the military since the Civil War.
Inside the vice president's very quiet ceremonial office in Washington, D.C., Joe Biden recalls he had just passed the state bar and left a cushy job to defend many of those rioters.
They would take people temporary hold down to the Wilmington train station. And here I was, and that was my first exposure to the train station, quite frankly, as a public defender.
Inspired by the civil rights movement, a 29-year-old Biden ran for the U.S. Senate in 1972 and won. He would go to that very train station and commute to the nation's capital daily, a routine Delaware's congressional delegation carries out to this day. That train station is where Biden waited for a newly elected Barack Obama to pick him up. Almost 40 years later to the day, together, they would ride 123 miles to D.C. to be sworn in as president and vice president in 2009.
It just struck me like a bolt of lightning. We're standing on the end of the platform waiting for the train. I looked out over the 3rd Street Bridge, and it had been in flames when I was 40 years earlier. And I looked at Lower East Side, much of which had been, was burned down as well. And I thought to my, I told my kids, I said, if you had ever told me 40 years ago standing here, I'd be waiting for an African-American man to pick me up to, I said, I wouldn't have believed it. Because I wondered then whether blacks and whites would ever talk to one another again.
It was a moment.
No, it was. It was a, and so anybody tells me there's no progress, I can tell them my own life story. There was enormous progress I've seen.
36 years in the U.S. Senate, 8 years in the White House. Biden admits he'll miss it.
I'm not sure how I'm going to adjust to it. Like I said, I've never done anything else as a practical matter. So we'll see.
A decades-long career will end at the train station where it all began. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Shirley Min, WHYY News.
Longtime Philadelphia Commissioner of the Department of Behavioral Health, Arthur Evans, is leaving the city to head the American Psychological Association. From the Behavioral Health Desk, Ann Hoffman has more on the impact he's had and the big job ahead of him.
Arthur Evans was the first person to act as Commissioner of the Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services in Philadelphia. Before, components of the job were embedded in the Health Department. He took on the position in 2004. During his 12-year tenure, he transformed Philadelphia into what has been called a model city when it comes to mental health.
It's really bittersweet to leave, but I also think that I've learned a lot that other organizations and people can benefit from, and I'm very excited to be able to take what I've learned here in Philadelphia and take it to a national level.
Arthur Evans has built a reputation for reducing stigma around addiction and using a public health approach when it comes to mental health. In 2005, he steered his department to a recovery approach, emphasizing the importance of a good quality of life and not just symptom control. Evans used a broad brush in spreading information about mental health issues. His department hosted trainings for citizens on recognizing signs of mental illness, funded mural arts programs, and worked with police officers on improving their interactions with mentally ill people.
Particularly from a vision perspective, it's a big loss.
That's Tony Valdez, executive director of the Children's Crisis Treatment Center. He says Evans' philosophy has to do with the importance of treating the whole person.
Most of the time in our field, we often think of, you know, the direct treatment that we do with the people that we serve, when you sit in an office and do therapy with someone, critical part of supporting people. But if we're not thinking about the context that everybody lives in, we're not going to really be able to support that person in the long run.
Susan McDaniel, past president of the American Psychological Association, says Evans is a great candidate to lead the organization as the country is on the cusp of big changes, and there's a lot of uncertainty about health care.
He can translate psychological concepts to anyone in an understandable way, and I think that's what we all need right now.
Evans says he wants to continue promoting the use of evidence-based practices in the field and engage in national policy. Current Deputy Commissioner David Jones will become Acting Commissioner in February. Ann Hoffman, WHYY News.
With every new administration, government-held information disappears. Digital archivists know this. They've worked in the past to preserve data from George W. Bush's administration's data when Barack Obama was elected. Sometimes, it's just a matter of budget priorities. Funds no longer exist to keep up a website. But with the incoming Trump administration, some scientists are worried that key environmental research will go missing for political reasons. State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports on how researchers are rushing to copy key data.
Imagine yourself a high school science teacher needing the most updated teaching tool for a lesson on climate change. You click on the EPA's link for climate change lesson plans, and it says, page not found. Or you're a parent of small children with asthma, and you're moving to a new town, and you want to know air quality data for different neighborhoods. Again, page not found. These are examples of what people like Michelle Murphy fear will disappear under the Trump administration.
So all those questions are kind of wrapped up together. So it should matter because it's what you breathe and what you drink and what you eat. And it's about your children and your community.
Murphy is an expert in technology science from the University of Toronto. She flew all the way to Philadelphia last week to participate in Penn's Data Refuge Hackathon. She also helped organize a similar hackathon in Toronto. Murphy says years ago, she did research on the loss of EPA data under the Reagan administration, which she says led to agency staffers unionizing.
And so there's a long history of these kinds of struggles in these agencies trying to defend scientific integrity and evidence-based research.
And data is not just threatened by Republican administrations. The data preservation organization, Internet Archive, in cooperation with the federal government's own publishing office, preserved more than 3,000 items from the George W. Bush administration before Obama took office. So whether or not Murphy's worst fears will come to pass, she says there is already a problem with preserving online data. Penn librarian Laurie Allen agrees.
The internet is a terribly unstable way to keep information available. I don't remember the statistic, but a huge number of references to websites no longer work.
Speaking from the top floor of Penn's library on Saturday, Allen was surrounded by about 100 people, archivists, librarians, tech workers, and students, all hunched over their computers, writing on whiteboards and racing to preserve climate data from the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration.
Okay, wait, can we just go back for a sec? So the metadata.json from my harvesting documentation?
Allen helped organize the Data Refuge hackathon at Penn. She says the cost of hosting all this data on private servers could run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Right now, the Data Refuge organizers are dependent on an anonymous donor. And as a librarian, Allen says she wants to make sure the information is stored properly.
So the datarefuge.org site right now is the holding area for these bags of files that we're getting from federal websites.
Kevin Burke volunteered for the effort, and he's a grad student studying anthropology at Penn. He says his tech skills are pretty minimal, and he won't likely use any of this data in his research. But he sees the effort as a potential love letter to the future.
When you're a historian and you're working in an archive, sometimes you pull out a folder and you just think, oh man, the foresight that somebody had to stick that in a folder and save that for me. And so now I can pull it out and make sense of something. I mean, I think that's really powerful.
By the end of the weekend, the volunteer hackers downloaded 1.5 terabytes of data. And they plan to move on to other cities in the next couple of months. The Trump administration has not said it plans to wipe the data slates clean. But the Data Refuge effort has taken on even greater urgency this week after the website, InsideEPA.com, reported current EPA employees predicting some of Obama's non-regulatory climate data will not, quote, survive the first day. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
At one time or another, we've all wondered, what if? What if I'd taken that job? What if I'd only spoken up? What if I hadn't met her? It's Robert Frost's proverbial road not taken. Now, what if all those choices coexist in parallel universes? A play being staged at the Wilma Theater explores the idea of just such a multiverse. As two characters meet at a party, the choices they make in their conversation lead to radically different outcomes in their relationship, which play out in a multiverse of parallel lives. Sarah Glico and Jared McLennigan play Marianne and Roland in Constellations.
Do you know why it's impossible to lick the tips of your elbows? They hold the secret to immortality. So, if you could lick them, there's a chance you'd be able to live forever. But if everyone did it, if everyone could actually lick the tips of their elbows, then there'd be chaos. Because you can't just go on living and living and living.
I'm in a relationship. So, yeah.
Do you know why it's impossible to lick the tips of your elbows? They hold the secret to immortality. So, if you could lick them, there's a chance you'd be able to live forever. But if everyone did it, if everyone could actually lick the tips of their elbows, then there'd be chaos. Because you can't just go on living and living and living.
I've just come out of a really serious relationship, so, yeah.
I was just making conversation.
Sure.
Just trying to start a conversation.
No, sure, but still.
Do you know why it's impossible to lick the tips of your elbows? They hold the secret to immortality. So, if you could lick them, there's a chance you'd be able to live forever. But if everyone did it, if everyone could actually lick the tips of their elbows, then there'd be chaos. Because you can't just go on living and living and living.
Oh, right.
Try it.
What's that?
Your elbows. Try licking them.
I'm all right.
I'm Marianne.
Roland.
Thank God the rain's held off.
Yeah.
Nothing worse than a soggy barbecue.
Yeah.
Soggy sausages. Would you like a drink?
I'm all right. My wife's actually just going to give me a beer.
Try it.
What's that?
Your elbows. Try licking them.
I see what you mean. I'm Roland.
Marianne.
Shame about the rain.
Nothing worse than a soggy barbecue.
So, are you a friend of Jane's? Or
No, Jane, yeah. We were at college together.
Right.
Yourself?
My wife used to work with Jane.
Your elbows. Try licking them.
I see what you mean. I'm Roland.
Marianne.
Shame about the rain.
Nothing worse than a soggy barbecue.
So, are you a friend of Jane's or...
Who's Jane?
Jane's the... She's the lady having the barbecue.
Oh, right. God, no. I was just walking past and I saw a load of free booze and sausages. I'm joking.
Right.
Jane and I were at college together. How about you?
I play football with Tom.
Tom?
Jane's brother-in-law. The bluey-green T-shirt.
Yes.
Do you want a drink?
I'm fine, thanks.
So, what do you do for a living?
I work at Cambridge University.
Right, great.
Yourself?
I'm a beekeeper.
Really?
Yeah.
You're really a beekeeper?
I'm really a beekeeper.
I love honey.
Oh, yeah?
Spoon, jar of honey, heaven.
What sort of honey do you normally go for?
I'm too embarrassed.
How do you mean?
Too embarrassed to tell you.
Why is that?
I like disco. The dirty stuff. Shh, the prison stripe stuff.
That's all right.
Really?
Of course.
I'm not putting honest, hard-working beekeepers out of business.
I wouldn't have thought so.
Do you think I'm a honey philistine?
Some of the supermarket stuff's all right.
Really?
Yeah, some of it's fine, yeah.
So, and I mean, don't take this the wrong way, but I mean, are you...
Go on.
Do you make a living?
I do, yeah.
From beekeeping?
From beekeeping.
How does it...
Well, I used to work for a friend of mine in Wiltshire.
Very nice. Mm-hmm.
After a while, though, decided I wanted to go into business on my own. But my girlfriend, ex-girlfriend...
I'm sorry for your loss.
What's that?
No, I was making a...
Right.
Sorry for your loss, as in...
Right.
It was just a...
No.
Anyway,
yeah,
you were...
No, so my ex wanted to move to London, so we got this one bed place in Mile End.
No wonder you broke up with her. I'd have broken up with her if she made me leave Wiltshire for bloody Mile End.
I'm still living there, actually.
Lovely curries.
There wasn't any room for bees.
I see.
We didn't have a garden.
Bummer.
One day, I was up on the roof, and I realised it was perfect. So I tidied it up a bit, and I got my first hive.
Amazing.
Went from one to two, from two to four. We went away, me and Laura. We went away to Spain, and when we got back, we found the flat had been raided.
Raided?
I used to keep the honey in trash bags, you know, those black plastic garbage bags.
Yes.
Well, didn't have a lot of money at the time, and trash bags were just a cheap alternative. When we were away, though, one of the neighbours called the police. Thought I was brewing up smack or something. They properly went for it, the police. They kicked the front door in, turned the flat upside down, and confiscated all these trash bags filled with the most amazing honey and honeycomb.
Did that really happen?
Yeah.
You used to keep honey in trash bags?
Yeah.
That's Sarah Glico and Jared McLenaghan in a scene from Constellations by playwright Nick Payne. It's being staged at the Wilma Theater. Finally this evening, today marks the 11th anniversary of the launch of the New Horizons probe, NASA's first mission to Pluto. It reached the Red Planet in 2015 and sent the last of the data it collected in October of last year. Mission accomplished, but not over. Still going strong. New Horizons has a new target, the Kuiper Belt, similar to the asteroid belt, but nearly 20 times as wide. And like the asteroid belt, the Kuiper Belt consists mainly of small bodies or remnants from the solar system's formation, including frozen orbs of methane, ammonia, and water. But don't hold your breath waiting for photos. It's estimated New Horizons will reach the Kuiper Belt in January 2019, and at that point, it will be more than 4 billion miles from the sun. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyako, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.